welcome to the Lantern Bearers, preserving culture when the lights go out. I'm Walker.
And I'm Peter.
And tonight we're going to be discussing, well, it's night for us, in this episode, we're going to be discussing libraries and research habits, study habits, the difference between the traditional process of going to the library and the way that people do research now.
In quotes.
In quotes.
Research is in quotes. You can put quotes around now if you want to, but
that wouldn't make any sense. Now, air quotes.
The way people do research now.
It's like, is it really now or is it not?
What is now?
Okay.
Yeah, comparing the way that research was done in the past prior to the information age.
Right,
And the way it is done now that we have the whole world at our fingertips with databases, Google.
Yeah.
All kinds of efforts to make, you know, libraries less about students going and finding information, more to kind of gathering spaces. And
yeah, I'm thinking of, like, the library at a technical college that I attended and how it...
Yeah.
It's, like, just kept shrinking, and so
yeah.
There's, like...
It's, like, five books like in five a magazine books. On one shelf.
Yeah, and the rest computers. Is computers.
Yeah, or, like, some tables for, like, interactive connectivity, dynamism, space, or other
mm-hmm.
buzzwords.
Mm-hmm.
I remember touring... not touring, we just went on our honeymoon. We went to a library in the city we were in, and like, two-thirds of the shelves on every floor were just being... The books were being pulled.
Yeah.
There were notes over them, like, throw.
Just,
you know, they would
taking
be like
it,
these
yeah.
beautiful old volumes of classic Western literature, and just like these
mm-hmm.
are going to the dumpsters, basically the gist of the notes. And it's like
yeah.
they were ripping that out so they could expand their interconnectivity gathering space. And,
right, right.
And more,
whatever that
more
means.
Databases that are instantly searchable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And don't they sometimes just take load up a bunch of books and take them like to a warehouse where supposedly they're still available for research, but nobody will ever
right.
look at them
know.
Again.
I don't know.
I feel like I've
probably a thing.
I've heard of that.
But anyway,
too.
So part of this is part of this conversation for us was sort of sparked by reading an article published in Memoria Press. I think they produce a
Classical Teaching.
Classical Teaching. It's kind of a company that produces curriculum.
Right.
Oriented in a towards kind of the trivium.
Yeah,
classical
curriculum.
Curriculum. And they publish I think it's a quarterly periodical
mm-hmm.
and called the teacher.
The classical teacher.
The
yeah.
classical teacher. And this article is by Dr. Carol Reynolds. She's a music historian, I believe, and it's called Going to the Library. She's just recounting her experience researching as a PhD student before
mm-hmm.
the information age,
right.
back in the 70s. So kind of that's partly the basis for our conversation, but also just kind of bringing in our own experiences
right.
as students who kind of have a little bit of experience in both.
Right.
So let's kind of just talk about what she outlines as the way she used to do research. And she says it was a three-step approach, which surprises many people now because, would surprise many people now because when you think of doing research, it's probably just
that's like the preliminary.
One step. It's like
yeah.
you sit down and you start Googling terms
right.
or you start entering terms in a database.
Yeah.
But for her, there's three parts. So the first bit is just preparing yourself for what it is you need to know.
Like,
which is, yeah, go
what,
ahead.
Like formulating your question kind of
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, formulating your question. What do I need to get out of this trip to the library? Because when you go to the library, in her case, it was a collection of music.
Right.
And oftentimes, you know, first edition, rare manuscript,
mm-hmm.
second thing. You can't just walk out with it. So
right.
the only way to read it is to go to the library.
Right.
So you actually have to have a plan in place before
Limited.
You go.
Limited access.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she would write down all of the questions she needed answered, kind of develop a study plan for every time she went. Second step is just going to the library, which you actually had to do. So she would get in her car and drive there and park and,
right.
you know, walk quite far. And, you know, it was like down in a basement and you'd like hit your head on the pipes that were hanging down. and then what you would do is you'd go in and you'd actually start... You know, looking through the index, which in this case would probably be like an actual physical
mm.
index. You'd look the titles up. You'd
right,
figure
right.
out, you'd pull them off the shelf, figure out how they're organized, skim through the contents, maybe read the first, you know, portion of each section or whatever, and,
mm-hmm.
and decide whether or not you wanted to bring it back to your study area. And you actually had to make a choice. Like, do I want to... How big a stack of books do I want to have to lug back to my cubicle?
Yeah, it was kind of limited, I suppose, right. Just by the facts of it being big and heavy. And...
Yep. And then you'd go and bring it to your cubicle, and then you just sit there and read, you know. And she said in her case, you'd read for hours, half a day, a whole day. There's just not really any... to do the research. You couldn't take the books out, so you just sit there. Any references or quotes you had to copy down by hand.
Right.
And then provide reference information no copy and paste. So you'd have to actually say, so-and-so said, quote, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
End quote. And then in...
You'd have to be really...
Name of the book.
Organized.
Published by... Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd actually have to be very organized, and so your notes would actually be quite valuable. You'd bring those away.
You can't just, like, send yourself a link.
Yeah. Yep. I do that so often now, but, you know, at this point, you actually had to do that. And then, you know, you'd go home, and as you were going home, that experience was so immersive, you wouldn't stop thinking about it right away. You'd think about it as you're driving home, and when you get home, and you're kind of settling down. And then when you look through your notes, you think about it again. So you kind of are digesting it a little bit more than once, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a long process of engaging with the information, which is pretty cool. So that's our three-step process. Plan, going to the library, selecting the books, and actually getting the information you think you might need. And
right.
Writing it down in the case of quotes.
By hand, probably.
Paraphrasing.
Yeah.
By hand, yep.
Right. Yeah, so that's pretty foreign to the modern student. That's that's very different.
A lot of students now have no notion of how to use, like, Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah,
if there was
an
actual physical index confronting them, it'd be like, it's like, what?
Right.
Many students don't really engage with books a whole lot anymore in terms of the actual physical thing. So
why
don't
you
just, maybe you're a more recent student than me in some ways, sort of.
A little bit, yeah.
Talk about your experience, the best and the worst, and
okay.
I'll talk about mine.
Okay. So, at my university, where I did my undergraduate and I'm doing my graduate degree, has a great library, actually. I mean, I don't have a lot to compare it with, but it seems like a pretty nice library. And but that experience that Dr. Reynolds is talking about, I haven't experienced as much, just a little bit, you know, like, obviously I've had to do plenty of research, and so there have been times when I go to the library and just, you know, you just have to start wading through actual physical books.
Mm.
But it took me a while even to learn to do that. Like, probably my first year or so, I did very little of that.
Yeah.
I was more relying on the internet, because that's what everybody does.
Right.
And so, I feel like, even when I did go and look through a lot of books, it was usually first researched by internet, you know, and there was a large technological component even there. So I, in some ways, I haven't really experienced this, but one thing that does stick out for me is, like, I had to do a bibliography on Shakespeare, and one of the things I wanted to include in there was the a facsimile of the first folio.
Oh.
And the library had one.
Oh.
And there was something very different about going there, finding this massive book. It was like the biggest book in the library, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of dimension, and very thick as well. And just actually pulling that out, putting it on a table, and looking through it was a really cool experience, and not something that could be replicated by, say, an online archive of the folio.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of online versions of Shakespeare's work, but there's, like, I don't even know how to explain it, but it...
I know what you mean.
Felt
so,
very different.
Just to clarify,
yeah,
it's like a replica of, you know, one of the first publications of Shakespeare's work.
Right. So it's...
So as it appeared.
Basically, just as it would have first appeared in
16...
I can't remember the exact date now. Early 1600s.
Yeah. Post-16... 30s. It would be about the 1630s to 40s, I think.
Yeah.
It was right after the Act of Supremacy. It was a little bit after that with Elizabeth, so probably in the 1640s, 50s reigns, actually.
Okay. For the first folio, I don't remember, but...
Yeah, maybe not.
For some reason, I want to say, writing, like, 1613, but that, I don't
It seems
recall.
A little early.
Yeah, that might be
I think that the... oh, you know what? I'm off by a century. 1530s. You're probably right.
Okay.
The Act of Supremacy, Henry the
Fifth. That was in the 15th.
Henry the Sixth. Okay. Henry the Eighth. Henry the Eighth. Jeepers! Don't listen to me, dear listeners. Mm. Listen to someone else who knows what they're talking about. I was all off. Yeah. Probably okay. About right, what you said. 1613.
So at any rate, it looks basically just how that would have looked. Yeah. So it's all... you know, the old printing,
and it's like the old print. And
it's like old spellings. with the F for an S. It's very,
that's really cool.
Very different, and just this big physical object.
You kind of actually probably feel like you're engaging a little bit more with Shakespeare.
Yeah, I felt much more like a scholar than when you just pull something up online, and the other thing is it was a reference work. Like you, I don't know, maybe you could check it out. I can't remember. I kind of don't think you could even check it out.
Yeah.
And so it was, again, like Dr. Reynolds was talking about, you had to be in the physical space of the library with a physical object, the book, to do your research. And so that was a cool experience. And
yeah,
I don't know, beyond that. One other thing I will say is, like, I've sort of tagged along, I've observed some freshmen...
I was going to say,
and just how completely lost they are in the library, because usually for a lot of them, like the course, their freshman composition or whatever is like the first time they've even been in the library.
On this college campus,
on this campus.
Hopefully not the first time they've
ever maybe been ever. In the for library. Some of them, honestly, of them, it could be ever. And they don't know how to find books and all of that.
But that was my next question, is just, what is your experience of other students? Do you think that they are moving away from this model? Would you say that most students are not going to the library, pulling books, pulling articles?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because whenever I go there, there's a lot of students there studying, but maybe that's different than, like, actually using the library as a research tool. So they're using it more as maybe just a place that's quiet.
Right, and it could just be a place that's quiet. Yeah. I looked at a study, it was a survey by McGraw-Hill,
okay.
Education publisher, producer.
Yeah.
It was conducted in 2017. It was a survey of students in undergraduate programs.
Okay.
And the majority of them indicated that they're using the internet more than physical resources to conduct research.
Right, yeah, so I would
majority
say
majority said they do most of their research online. Majority of them do research in their dorm room or at home. They prefer to do it there
as opposed
to in the library.
Sure.
So there's probably still a pretty, you know, decent-sized contingent who are using the library. But if I remember the number from the study, it was more like, you know, 60 to 70% preferred to use the internet and study at home or in their dorm room. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
And they all thought, you know, the majority surveyed thought that it was a great tool. So, But it's interesting that you've had, I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised, because I think you've probably taken a little bit more calculated approach to actually try and use that, as opposed to just sitting down and Googling.
Yeah. Or whatever. Sometimes,
I mean, sometimes you got to get a crank a paper out, and you're like, hey, what does Google Scholar have to say?
Right.
You know?
Right. And then you come up with all these...
You sort I remember of skim an abstract and be like, an abstract and be like, huh, yeah, it's saying this, good, you know, that is saying this.
Yeah, you get pretty good at
doing
very surface level research.
Pull some information from here and there just to like throw some, you know, not that you're plagiarizing or anything, but you know, you're just, you know, quickly getting information so you can stick it in your bibliography or whatever.
Yeah. You know. But what about your experiences with the library?
Yeah, so I had... I'm kind of interesting because I'm, you know, almost a, you know, in some ways like approaching a decade behind you, and this is accelerating so fast that it's a little different in some ways. Mm. But I would say that the majority of my peers were not using the library as a major resource.
As a major resource.
Most of them, as I recall, you know, when we had our library orientation or freshman comp courses, and I tutored a little bit too and helped people kind of hone their writing and what have you. The majority of them did not know how to use a library. You know, they didn't know the Dewey Decimal System. They didn't find books. And they were doing all of their research, if they did any, online, you know.
Right.
Right. I was not super inundated by the information age prior to enrolling in undergrad.
Okay.
I was homeschooled, and I did most of my research as in high schooler, what have you, just from reading.
With actual books.
With actual books, research and quotes. It's not like I was researching anything. But when I was, most of my education was just pretty straightforward. Here's a book, read it, write a paper on it, that kind of thing. Right. So I wasn't super inundated by that. So for the first year or two, I did most of my research in pretty traditional form.
Yeah.
Finding books and articles and, if it was an article, printing it off, marking it up, reading it and, reporting in that way. As I progressed, I'd say that I kind of got less and less good at that. I tended to do a little bit more of the skim of the internet, kind of the Cliff Notes version of
research. Yeah, yeah.
Which is sad. I feel like the more exposure I had to the vast amount of information that was available online, the more the quality of my research went down.
Yeah, you get overwhelmed.
It was just so easy to be like, oh, I can put that off, because I can always just bring my computer home and find a source. I don't have to go to the library.
Yeah, right.
One experience, though, that kind of stands out for me on a positive was, this is going to sound really annoying and pretentious and snobbish, and I apologize in advance.
All right, let's hear it.
But I did a little bit of time in Oxford, and actually got to be allowed have access to the Bodleian Library
System, right.
One of the best libraries in the Western world.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating. It was like upwards of, I forget how many millions of books are in the Bodleian, but it's just this huge network of libraries all throughout the University of Oxford, which incorporates dozens of colleges. They would bring books as far away from like 25 miles away if you requested them sometimes.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible. And that was a very different experience from what you have in the States. So partly because it's just such an old library system. Uh-huh. It's 1,000 years old plus and what have you. So when we were enrolled in the system, we had to go in and take an oath to treat the books right.
To take an oath.
We had to actually sit down in front of a library representative and put your hand on this book and read this oath,
Wow.
And I forget what all that we oathed, all that we swore. It was like, don't bring any flames into the library.
Yeah.
We vowed not to eat chips and stuff.
Because it's a real cultural...
It was an ancient oath, yeah.
Treasure there.
It was a real cultural treasure, and it's the same oath they've been saying for hundreds of years, I think we read it in Latin.
In Latin?
I think so. Gee. And they translated it for us.
That does sound pretentious.
It sounds super pretentious. People are going to wonder.
No, it's...
Oh, never mind.
It's all good.
But one of the unique things about the Bodleian was you couldn't take any of the books out, and the libraries, there were a network of libraries. There was kind of a central one, which everyone associated as the Bodleian. I think it was called the Bodleian.
Okay.
And there was a Radcliffe camera right there. And then there were libraries at all the different colleges that were sort of specialized.
Okay.
And so depending on your interest, you would go to the one that, suited you. Sure. Science, antiquities, blah, blah, blah. So I was interested in kind of classical Mediterranean literature. And, the ancients. I was taking kind of an ancient Greek course. So I went and did a lot of research at this one specific library that had a lot of works like that.
Yeah.
And you couldn't bring anything out. And so I had to do a little bit of what Dr. Reynolds is talking about, where you kind of develop a plan. When I went, it would be, okay, I'm going to identify... I had the advantage of having a database at my fingertips in advance, so I knew what books this library had.
Yeah.
So I would go in knowing, okay, I found these 10 books. I'm going to go grab those off the shelves, pull them to my desk, skim through them, and then I had a laptop, but I would still copy quotes, type them out by hand, and then type out a reference by hand, or I would do it, sometimes I'd just write it out if I didn't want to use my laptop, but I actually had to have a plan in place and bring information back to my dorm room, because I couldn't write a paper unless I was sitting there.
More intentional.
Yeah, this was my one chance to get access to that book, and in some cases they were kind of rare books or what have you. And, because it was sort of a course focused on ancient Greece and what have you, a lot of the sources were non-written, they were archaeologic. Mm-hmm. So my professor was like, I want you to go to this museum and look at this collection and use that as a source today.
So it wasn't even a book.
It wasn't even a book. You'd go and be like, I'd look at pottery all day. And so I'd go to the museum, and that was just, I'd walk around with my notebook, and like, I'd write down the reference number for the vase, and write down the, you know, what collection it was in, and who donated it, because that's how you'd cite it. Because there's actually a way to, like, cite a vase.
There's a way to cite
a way to cite a vase. And this library had an online database of vase fragments, too, but some of them were only in this museum. So, you know, you had to actually have a plan, and you actually had to go, it was kind of like your experience with the folio. You had to go and experience, like, I'm going to go look at vases all afternoon. You look and be like, okay, well, such and such a vase, you know, helps add evidence to my argument about Greek funeral practices.
Yeah.
Here's a depiction of a funeral celebration. Very much on this a primary vase source, from, you know, the, you know, whatever years in ancient Greece. You write down the reference number. And
it's different.
And if I got the reference number wrong, it's like I can't go back. You know, like I'm sitting there at midnight the night before it's due. It's like, oh, I'll just quick run to the, oh, the museum's closed, you know.
Yeah.
I can't just Google it because it's only in the museum, you know.
Right.
So.
And there's something different about actually seeing it. I was going to say tactile, but you don't probably touch the
No, they didn't let me touch it. Could you open this case? I'd like to kind of manhandle it.
Yeah, I'd like to just kind of like
just
get some oils on it.
Yeah. They're like, so, are you mad? You know. So,
are you mad?
Are you mad?
No, but just like, it is more physical.
It is. I mean, I had to like literally, you know, walk my little butt into the museum and with my little notebook and my little American undergrad self.
Right.
You know, all these British academics are sort of standing there in the corner looking down their nose at you. Like, oh, look at that kid, you know. He's probably American.
He's probably American.
Poor soul. It was a good... that was probably the highlight of my undergrad experience.
Sure.
My academic experience, honestly.
Yeah.
Was that exposure to just a tiny fragment of what research used to be like.
Yeah. You know? So... You know, what's the advantage of that method, the old-fashioned method?
Mm. Yeah, because some people will say, well, sure, it's that's all fine slower. And well, it's a lot slower, and there's thousands of volumes, thousands of articles at your fingertips with the internet connection. Mm. I would say that the advantage to this older way is that it's much more intentional, and you have much more of a purpose in mind. I feel like modern research, especially of undergraduates, is fairly aimless.
Yeah, and
it's just
kind
sort of like they're pulling together quotes to make it look like they did something, but they don't necessarily understand what they did, or they might not even have read it. They'll just sort of say, well, I skimmed the abstract and the table of contents. And that's the students who know what they're doing, is the ones who know to skim this abstract and the table of contents.
Right. Yeah, I've done that kind of thing.
Yeah,
for sure,
I mean, we've all been there, where you're just sort of like...
read that much of it, you just read a few parts.
Like, okay, I'll pull this quote from here.
Yeah.
And
it is a lot easier to quote, because you can do the copy and paste.
Yep, it's a lot easier to quote. And it's just, I don't feel like it's as intentional, and I don't feel like you're actually learning as much. You're just fulfilling the objective to get that end grade.
Yeah, you probably
Whereas
don't
Whereas this older method, you're like... I'm going into the museum. I'm going to read, you know, I'm going to look at some attic vases. I'm going to the library and I'm going to get a bunch of books on this.
I feel like...
And you actually have to know something about what it is you're looking into. So you actually, then you're like, oh, here's a thing, you know, I found this, but that opens up this question. I got to go learn about that now. Like, what is an attic vase, you know?
Yeah. I also think you'd have to be a lot more careful about your quote usage because it takes so long to get a quote.
It
you have to
does.
Copy it by hand.
You're carefully copying
with
it by hand.
Copy and paste, you can just kind of grab stuff and you don't have to think that hard about the quote and it might not even be the best one.
And if you're actually writing it down by hand and then putting it in a paper or in an assignment or what have you, you're engaging with it at least three times because you kind of write it down, you think about it.
Well, first you read it.
First you read it, then you write it down by hand, and then you write it again when you put it into your...
In your paper.
In your paper. So you're engaging with it multiple times in different ways, so you actually kind of internalize it a little bit more.
Yeah,
whereas if
true.
You're just like quick, like, oh, crap, it's midnight the night before the thing is due, and I'm you know, Google scholaring this topic, and you're like, oh, there's a quote, copy-paste. There's another quote, copy-paste. You're not going to remember anything of all of that, you
right.
know?
Right. That is true. That is true.
You'll hand it in, even if you get an A, even if you get a great grade, and the person's like, this is good, you know?
Well, you can make it look, you can make it look good if you get practice.
But you're not actually learning anything, you're just, like, fulfilling requirements, which is sad.
Yeah, right.
I feel like you should learn something, given that college is expensive.
Yeah. So. Going back to that Shakespeare bibliography, I kind of appreciated that because I did actually have to read a lot of stuff. Not nearly as much as I should have, honestly.
Yeah. You mean like about?
But each the folio? The folio. Well, about Shakespeare in general, because you know we had to write an abstract. It was an annotated bibliography, so we had to write something about each source.
Yep.
Which meant I couldn't just cherry pick quotes. Yeah. I needed to understand the work as a whole, in order to give a summary of it. You know, and so I'd have to. I still didn't read as much as I should. Didn't read back to back necessarily, but I did have to really spend some time with each source and understand it as a whole and how it fit in the big picture. So that was a pretty good assignment in that way, and I think taps into the same idea a little bit.
Yeah, and it's interesting how an assignment can become an experience you really enjoy. Not necessarily something that's super pleasurable, but something that gives you deep satisfaction mm-hmm. when you kind of engage with it a little bit more in this way. I found that when I am late, you know, I'm up late, and I've just got something due, and I just want to churn something out, I don't enjoy that at all. And I don't look back on that assignment, like, I don't even remember the assignment.
Right.
Like, I know I churned out dozens of papers like that for undergrad and grad school, and I can't even think of them at all. Whereas the papers that I spend a lot of time on, and I went in and I, you know, boy, did I work hard for that paper. I can still remember those. I can still remember stuff I said. I can still remember quotes. And I relish the experience.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And like, I actually learned a lot about Shakespeare during that process.
Yep.
Because I read at least portions of, you know, 20, 30 books. Or 20, 30 different sources on
Shakespeare. Right, yeah, it could be books or articles or what have you, but...
So, yeah.
There is something to be said for that. I feel like there is something to be said just in the quality and fullness of the experience that you get from a little bit more of a deep look into an intellectual problem like that, like Dr. Reynolds is talking about.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is there more we want to add on that?
I don't think so. She has a great quote at the end of the article. I'd like to read it.
Yeah, read that off.
As our ending point. So she's talking about how a lot of people are going to disagree with her notion that, you know, this older way of research is better. And she says, many would say, quote, get with it, Carol. That world is gone and we don't need it or buggy whips any longer. The new way is better. And she says, I wish they were right, but I know they are wrong. So.
Yeah.
On that note.
Thanks.
Go to the library.
Yeah, go to the library. Maybe you're at the library right now.
Right now, and hopefully on headphones, because it's quiet.
That's right, yeah. I'm super obnoxious otherwise.
Yeah.
But thanks for tuning in, and we will...
I was going to say
see you next time, but
we'll catch you later.
That would be creepy. We won't see
anybody. We won't be seeing anybody. Well, I hope we see somebody.
None of our listeners, though.
Right. All right. Thank you.